My name's Helen Wilkinson and I'm with the Story Project, and I'm here with Cynthia Hoogstraten in Bundaberg. Today's date is the 12th of November 2011. We're in Bundy and we're recording with the Story Project. And Cynthia is going to talk about some of her family's journey and life journey, including with her parents. So Cynthia, you mentioned that you'd like to start with your mum.
Okay. As a young girl, we found out that my mother was interned in a Japanese war camp during the war. And I guess growing up, we realised the significance of that because it was her time as a teenager when she was in the camp. She was there with her mother and her two other sisters from about 16 to 19. So understanding that age group and how we were living our life so free and wonderful in Australia, and thinking about what my mother must have gone through, we often tried to speak with her about it. And I think that the worst thing that really happened to her was when she was actually hit by a Japanese soldier. We know a lot of other stories about women who ended up going into brothels and so forth, but I'm sure that, I know that my mother didn't have to go through that, but they obviously had work that they had to do, and of course their food was rationed. And I often think about how Mum always welcomed people into her home in later years and always made sure that they never left without having had something to eat or to drink. And I think that had a lot to do with how she spent those times in the war camp. But fortunately, she came out of that alive, because I understand that when they did leave the camp, they left on trucks, and they all had to lie down in the back of a truck, and the trucks were sheltered and they had to more or less go out quickly. And I know that some of the trucks were shot at. So, she was one of the lucky ones to get out with her mum. But they went back to Holland after that. And
she was born in Holland, was she?
Yes, she was born in Holland and went to Indonesia with her parents, and then after the internment went back to Holland again, where she found work as a in the telephone exchange. And that's in the time when my father met my mother.
Your father appeared.
Yes.
Can I just ask you a quick question? So it was through the Indonesian route that your mother and her mother had ended up in the Japanese POW camp, is it?
Yes, that's right.
That's how it went. I forgot to ask you your mum's name.
Annika. Well, she was called Annika, but she had lots of names, but everyone knew her as Annika. But the interesting story about how Mum and Dad met, my father and his best friend went to a theatre to watch a film about Indonesia, ironically, and my mother and her sister were at the theatre watching the same film, and the men noticed the two women, and after the film they asked to go out with, or to actually escort them home. And after that, obviously, they rather liked each other's company, and they often went out on dates going to other films. And sometime later, my father's best friend asked my mother's sister to get married. And of course, my father was quite smitten by my mother, and they had a double wedding. And that was wartime, so it was held in a registry office, and I think they were borrowed gowns. But so they were married in the registry office in Holland. And from there, because my father and his best friend, they were learning about agriculture, and a position came available in Indonesia. So back they all went to Indonesia, and that's where we were born. I have two sisters and a brother, and my father was a supervisor on tobacco plantations in Indonesia. And
how long were you there for? Was he there for, or was your family there for?
Not very long. I was born there, but my older sister, who's 5 years older than me, so we were probably in Indonesia for about the 5 or 6 years before, again, we went back to Holland, because a lot of Dutch people were in Indonesia, but there came a stage where a lot of the Dutch went back to Holland again. So Dad continued on working in the plantations there as supervisor, and my mother's parents were there as well, only for a short time, because during a payday situation, I understand there were two men who were murdered on a payday situation, and they said, that's it, we're out of here and we're not staying in Indonesia. So they left to go back to Holland, but Mum and Dad stayed on. So that would have been frightening for them, but yeah, we stayed on there as a family. But we left when I was about a year old, so I didn't know anything about Indonesia. I know a little bit about Holland, and that's where we were for another 5 years.
Before we go back to Holland, yes. What kind of time was it that you were in Indonesia? The 60s? 50s?
No, that would have been 50. Well, I was born in 57, so we were there, I guess, from about 51, around that time. Yes.
And you headed back to Holland.
Back to Holland again. Mm. And the reason why we came to Australia, Dad was out of work, and a lot of people in Holland were given the opportunity to come to Australia. There was the opportunity of work in Australia.
Was there a particular scheme that was called?
There must have been, because a lot of people came across. But at the same time, Dad's, he was actually offered work in Papua New Guinea. So we were actually headed for New Guinea at the time when we came across. We were in an immigration camp, starting off, I think, in Sydney, and then in Wacol in Brisbane.
Ah. So you arrived in Sydney. How did you get over from Holland? What was it? Was it a boat trip?
No, it was plane.
By plane?
It was plane. Okay. I don't remember that, though. Mm-hmm. I do recall getting ready for that trip, because there were lots of family photos taken in Holland, and it was all goodbyes to all the family. And when I think about it, it must have been a huge impact on Mum and Dad to leave everything they knew to come to Australia. Dad knew a little bit of the English, the Australian language, but my mother couldn't speak any English. And as children, all we knew basically were the words yes and no. So I had a sister who was a year younger, and we both started grade one together in here in Bundaberg. I said, we were supposed to go to New Guinea, but apparently there were a lot of unrest there. And so my father decided not to take his family there, and the job came available here in Bundaberg. So we came here, and my father was employed with what was then called the Irrigation Water Supply Commission, which has changed lots of names and is now Sunwater. But he was in that job with looking at dams and doing surveying and that all the time we were here in Bundaberg.
Do you remember much about the trip or the immigration centre or Wacol?
I do.
I remember
in the immigration centre. It was a lot of fun as a child, because there were families from all over the world that were there, and we had function nights where we used to get dressed up, and we met other people from overseas. And all I can think of that was a good time as a child for us. It was all very exciting. And, we were really well nurtured by our mother and father. It was like a big adventure for us. So we didn't feel frightened or threatened about our big trip. It just seemed quite a normal thing to just go off with Mum and Dad. But I guess now, being older, I think about the fact that they left all that they knew and all their family, because we were always very, very close in Holland. We had lots of uncles and aunties, and of course, Mum had two sisters and still her mother alive, and Dad, of course, still had his parents alive as well. So to leave all that and come to a totally different country would have been a huge step, and not knowing, you know, where we were going to live or what he was going to do. But to take the whole family, you know, with four little ones to come across. Yeah.
It's huge.
It is huge, yes. And I guess thinking even about Mum going back to when she was in Indonesia and we were just little, we had help then. We had, you know, a babysitter, we had a housekeeper. It's a normal thing in Indonesia to have help. Of course, when they had to leave to go to Holland, she was basically on her own, having to then rear four children, because in that time too, she was on her own sometimes for up to 6 months, I think, when my father did go back to Papua New Guinea to work. So there was sort of lots of crisscrossing because he had to get work where he could at the time. And our house in Holland was a two-story place, and it didn't have a bathroom. Dutch people only had a bath, you know, once a week, because it was cold. So it's not like here in Australia where you shower, you know, twice a day. There, you know, to have a bath was sometimes a weekly thing. And we used to do that in a big metal, what would you call it, like a big dish in the kitchen. And that's where we washed. But while he was there, he actually did build a bathroom. But a lot of the European homes just didn't have bathrooms. It just wasn't necessary. People used to just have a wash and not showers. So I remember that as a child. I'm going back again here, but I'm just thinking about, you know, Christmas time in Holland. Of course, we had snow, and we had lots of decorations around the chimney, and waiting for, we used to put out carrots and gingerbread cookies and that for Santa. With St. Nicholas, of course, in Holland. It was called St. Nicholas, and he used to arrive, and we used to leave goodies out for him. And it was always happy times. We had a wonderful upbringing as children. And I guess looking back now, I'm very grateful for the fact that we came to Australia. I have been back to Holland once in 1976, and coming back to Australia, I feel really blessed, because we have so much room and not so crowded, and we love the outdoors here, whereas you know, in Europe it can be quite cold, and people tend to live in small homes, and of course it's so many people living there.
Much more crowded.
Yes, much more crowded.
Did you want to talk at all about how it was for you and your family when you first came to Bundaberg?
Yes, yeah. When we came to Bundaberg, obviously because Dad was given a posting here, we set about looking for a place to live. And I remember that we spent a few nights in a hotel in the main street as our accommodation till they found a home. And they made a choice between a home on Bagara Road and one outside of town. And I'm so glad that they picked the one here on Bagara Road, because that was a great position halfway between Bundaberg and Bagara. And my father still lives there. In the same house. The house hasn't changed much at all. It's a big old Queenslander. And I've seen so many changes, obviously, around this area and Bundaberg and Bagara.
Before we talk about any changes there, what are some of your memories of your early time here in Bundy and being brought up,
yes,
I guess, as a migrant child?
Yes.
And with your parents, your mum not speaking English,
that's
and
right.
How that was for you all?
Yes. First day at school for us, with only knowing those two words, yes and no. Children do pick things up very quickly. It didn't really seem to matter that we didn't really know the language. Somehow we picked it up. Mm. And so we went off to school. Our place was probably a kilometre down the road, so we were able to walk to school, which was the done thing then. Mm. I mean, nowadays you probably wouldn't think of sending your children off to school walking down the road. You know, we didn't think about problems that they have now with children, but we walked to school, and there were times we even rode a horse to school. And I still remember the slate and the slate pencil that we used right at the very beginning, although exercise pads did come out quite around that time as well. But I still remember sitting at the school desk with the slates and so forth. But because we couldn't speak the language, there were little songs that we had to sing in the morning at school. And there was a song, and we still laugh about it now, there was a song about a postman bringing the bill. And in Dutch, the word bill means bottom. So every time we sang the song and we came to the word bill, my sister and I used to just crack up. And of course, after a while, the teacher wasn't quite impressed because she didn't understand why we kept on laughing. But to us, it was quite funny.
Did you tell her?
Yes, in the end, I think we did tell her as we grew up a little bit. But school was fun too. And after a while, from memory, you know, we just learnt the language and we just, we were there with all the other kids. So we were part of them. It wasn't a problem. You know, my parents always made sure that we had the school uniform and we were very much like the other children as well. And in those days, the school seemed to be a very sort of simple situation. The teachers were really good and they accepted us. There was one teacher, though. I mean, in those days, too, when they used to discipline the children, of course, they had the cane, which it was about a metre and a half long of bamboo, and my brother always used to get into trouble, and that wasn't much fun watching him getting the cane. And a lot of young boys mainly used to get the cane. They don't do that now, so that was a kind of a bad memory of school. And you know, I still remember seeing the face of the teacher doing that and having my brother out the front getting his discipline sometimes. But we, you know, we grew up, and that was all part of growing up. We just accepted that.
No, that's okay. I was going to ask you. You mentioned your brother. Your brother was older than
yes.
you. Is that right?
Yes, he was a few years older.
A few years older. So you had siblings who were a bit older. You were five or six.
Yes, I was six. My sister, my younger sister, was five. Mm-hmm. Was five. So we were in the same class together. Mm-hmm. So we basically grew up together. We had to share a bedroom at home, and my older sister and brother had their own bedrooms. Mm-hmm.
Was it any harder for your older brother and sister, do you think, coming over? Or was it much the same for you as for you?
I think it would have been the same for us. I think my mother probably would have had the most difficulty because she also had the olive skin, and racism in those days was still quite rife. And I think she did feel a backlash from people who treated her differently. Not so much in later years, but in those early years, definitely, because she had the olive skin. We didn't really have a problem at school so much. And, of course, my father had his work, so he didn't have a problem with the language. And, of course, he had his social network with his work. But with Mum, I think she ended up taking English lessons, and she did her best to sort of meld into the community.
So it sounds like she might have been a little bit isolated for some time.
For a little while, but her personality was such that she took a step forward and became involved, whether it was with the schooling, and of course later when we left home, she was involved in lots of things here within the Bunaboo community, and she was much loved by lots of people here. So she didn't stay at home and feel sorry for herself. In fact, she realised how wonderful it was to be in Australia, even though she did really miss her family back home, which would have been a big thing for her to leave her sisters and mother at home.
Did she or your dad ever talk with you about what it was like for them being here, and missing their family or any of those kinds of things? They tell you much?
Yes, they did. I think later on in our lives, we got the impression that they were very happy with the fact that they came to Australia. We had so many more opportunities here, and it was a healthier life here. We were able to spend more time outdoors. So even though Mum missed her family, she realised that it was a good decision. And also then there was also a strong Dutch community within the Bundaberg area. So she did have Dutch friends. Mm. And even now there's still a circle of friends that get together over coffee. So having that to say she was isolated. In fact, there was a one woman that she met up who was actually in the same prisoner of war camp as her, and she ended up living in Bundaberg and bringing up her children here. So there was a connection there. Hmm.
What else would you like to talk about your upbringing?
My upbringing. Well, when I sort of compare how children grow up now to when we were growing up, we spent a lot of time outdoors. We went camping a lot, and because Dad worked for the department, the water department, he knew lots of exciting places to go near dams and streams and where there was water. And we were always going out camping and having picnics. And I think when I see a lot of children now, a lot of them spend a lot of time in front of their computers or indoors, and they don't go out as much as we did. We were free to wander around the cane fields on our own. We had horses, so we would ride on our horses through the cane paddocks, often by ourselves. We used to go riding to Monrepo, which is now a turtle reserve.
Horse riding.
We were able to ride the horse on that beach, which was wonderful. We'd take the horses in the water. Can't do that now. But I look back now and think, gosh, that was a big risk riding on my own. But we used to ride along Bagara Road, and it wasn't so busy then as well. And the horses that we had were all ex-race horses, so they used to gallop rather fast. And I remember Dad still has the old VW that he bought many, many years ago. And I remember galloping down Bagara Road, and he was driving his VW next to me, and we were basically having a race. You wouldn't do those sorts of things now. just being able to hop on the horse, put the saddle on, and off we go and ride wherever we... I mean, now you'd kind of think about bringing a mobile phone or having somebody else with you, but we didn't do those sorts of things. We were here, of course, for the 74 flood, so we saw what happened to Bundaberg then. And, of course, we had the big flood here at Christmas time, so that was sort of an interesting period to go through as well.
Would you like to talk about some of your memories about those times?
I've only sort of got photos. I mean, for us, it was exciting to see all the water. Our home wasn't exactly affected. Because it was a high-set Queenslander, we did have water go underneath the house. But since then, they've done a lot of... they've built like a big drain at the back of my parents' house. But, you know, as kids, we used to get those foam boards and go swimming in the gutters when the water was raging. We didn't think about, you know, chemicals in the water or snakes or anything like that. We just did it. We had lots of fun. We used to go splashing around, put a boat in, and there wasn't any thought about that we shouldn't be there.
Whereas I know this year with the floods in the last 12 months, it was very much people stay out of the water.
Exactly. Yeah. And even we had a cane railway line that runs past our old house. As children, we used to play on the cane bins, and, you know, we'd sometimes change the line where the bins would go. And I mean, that's so dangerous now. I mean, they've got ads on television, you know, don't let your kids play on the cane bins. But we used to do that, and we didn't think it was dangerous. It was exciting for us.
What do you mean by change the line on the cane bins?
Well, you have your railway lines, and you'd bring a bin forward, change the line.
Change the line, so yes, put it on another bin, you mean?
No, put it on another line.
Oh, God. Sabotage, in other words.
Yeah, well, we used to do that. But, you know, for us it was a lot of fun, and we didn't think there was any danger to that.
It was a game,
yeah. But now, I mean, parents would be very concerned about letting their kids even outside their yard, but that's what we used to do.
Were there many other kids in the area that you played with, or was it all your own family?
No, there were other kids with us as well. Being at the school, there were a lot of children who lived nearby that would come and play. And
sabotage the show.
Yes. Not that we did anything wrong. It was, you know, we'd put the bins back in the end. But I see those ads now and think, oh, my gosh, you know, we shouldn't have been doing that, because you could have got your leg caught between the bins or, yeah. But not that the trains weren't there. It was just playing with the bins, but...
Well, yeah. There's so much about minimising risk and safety these days. It's very different, isn't it?
And I sometimes wonder about how children are growing up now. Like, we've got those huge camphor laurel trees in our paddock, because we had an acre where we are. We used to have cubby houses in there and climb those trees. There was never a thought, okay, be careful, you might fall and break a leg. We just did it. We got old pieces of timber and built cubby houses in the camphor laurel trees. Go bareback riding on the horse. At one stage, we found this horse. It was walking along the road, and we actually caught this horse and put it in a paddock just up the road. And when we came home from school, we thought, you know, let's see if we can ride this thing. We didn't know anything about the horse, so we took the saddle and we bridled it, and put the bridle on this horse. And it wouldn't seem to take the saddle, but there were three or four of us. We were all, you know, young, not even in our teens yet. And slowly but surely, we ended up getting this saddle on the horse. And slowly but surely, we ended up actually getting onto the saddle and actually riding this horse. And I think by the end of the second day, the owner realised where the horse was and inquired about his horse, and we told him that we had been riding it, and he was just astounded, because I don't think the horse was ever broken in, and he'd never ridden the horse. But as kids, we just didn't have any fear. We just, it was like the horse whisperer, I guess, that you're off now. They're just things that we did.
How old were you then, do you think? In your teens or younger?
Early, probably 11, 12, 13, that sort of age group. So we didn't really think again about the fear of doing things like that. But and then that from there we went to high school locally, which was Kepnock High School, and I remember my father wanted us to ride our bikes to school, and we felt that was too much of a distance. So,
how far is it? Can't think.
About 3 or 4 k's from the house. But what we used to do was ride the bikes to the top of the hill and hide the bikes behind the shop and catch the bus to school. It was just too far, but we did things like that.
And your parents never knew?
No, not for a while.
But where did you get the money from to pay for the bus?
I'm sure the bus was free in those days. Yeah, maybe it was just a government-run bus, but yeah, I don't think we had to pay to get on the bus. Yes, as kids. But no, growing up in Bundaberg, my parents, when I think about my growing up years, they were great. My parents were lovely. They provided for us. We had lots of love. Christmases were always great. We always had lots of presents, and we were well looked after. And I think that way of bringing up children, it's once again a bit different from it is now. I remember turning 18 and basically saying, okay, well, it's time to leave home. And then I ended up hopping into my VW. I had a VW as well. And off I went to the Sunshine Coast and just basically found a place to live.
And this is the 60s now we're talking, or the early 70s?
I left Bundaberg in 1974.
Oh, so we're in the mid-70s now. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're growing up to... I'm sorry, I've lost track of the years. So the school years in high school was through
all
the through
Bundaberg.
The 60s.
Yes.
60s, okay.
Yeah, and early 70s. Mum took us to church, not that we were religious. Dad never went. We went to a local church. I remember we had to wear hats for some reason. That was obviously the religion.
So you wore hats as well, not just your dad?
Yeah, no, Dad didn't go to church. So it was just Mum. She took all the children to church every Sunday. I think that's been a good upbringing as well. But like I said, it's not that we were religious as such. It was just the thing to do. I think Mum was invited to go along by a friend. And so off we went to church every Sunday. Living in Bundaberg, yeah, like I said, it was we felt free. We were able to do any sports or get involved in anything at school. And there was lots of love in the house. We never went without food or clothing. It was just a great way of growing up.
And do you see that you mentioned earlier that there's such a contrast between life in Australia and life in Holland as you know it. Are there any other particular contrasts that you would see? Or
I think basically those wide open spaces and that outdoor life that we have here is not so much that you can have in Europe because of the cold and the climate. So I'm grateful each day that we're living here in Australia. And I love Bundaberg. I ended up leaving after school to go to the Sunshine Coast, but funnily enough, I came back, which happens to a lot of people. Mm. So, yeah, I like living here.
Why did you come back?
That's another story.
Another story? Okay.
Oh, look, I can say, look, I was meant to come back. I'm the only one here now, and since my mum passed, I'm now taking care of my dad. He's 83, and so I feel I'm meant to be here. And Bundaberg's been very, very good to me. I've back in school, I was very interested in design work, in textiles. And I don't know whether or not we should go into that area, but I was an academic student at school, although I never really liked school. I was always very much on the outer and tended to spend a lot of time in the study room. Whereas my other sister, who's very sort of outgoing, she was out there with her friends. I just didn't feel I could fit in some of the times, and I spent a lot of time studying and learning all my subjects basically rather than socialising. Mm. So when it came to grade 11, I was actually given a scholarship to go on because I did so well at school. But after that Christmas break, I went back to school and I kind of lost the ties with a lot of friends. And once again, I just didn't feel that I belonged. And in those days, you could leave school, find a job, no trouble, and do night school, which is basically what I did. I hopped on the bus one day. I didn't tell my parents, and the bus always stopped in town. And when we got to town, I thought, this is it. I hopped off the bus. I walked into, it's now Chippendall's, which is a bookstore. It was also a pharmacy at the time. And I walked in and asked whether I could work there. And I was offered a job straight away. So that afternoon, I must have gone back to school and caught the bus home again. I said to my parents, I'm not going to school anymore. I've got a job. And my sister had worked in the sugar industry as a cane tester. It seemed to be the thing to do. I said, look, I'll do this job and I'll go to night school and I'll also become a cane tester. So I ended up working for the sugar board. But I didn't regret leaving school. Like I said, I was away from... Because I think I was that year older too, because I had my sister in my class, but that year seemed to make a big difference in my maturity. So that's what I did. I ended up leaving school.
And you were ready to move on, and then after that, for a while, not too long after that, you went to the Sunshine Coast.
Yes.
And that's another adventure. Yes. Did you want to talk about that Sunshine Coast time?
Or we can, because I'm just thinking now, being in the sugar industry... I fell in love with a man that actually worked at the Newsmail, and he was transferred to work for the Telegraph in Brisbane. So I thought, well, I'll go to the closest sugar mill, which was the one in Nambour. I'll transfer to Nambour for a sugar season. So that's what I did. 1974, I packed up everything and said, Mum, I'm off. Mum, Dad, I'm off. And... drove to the Sunshine Coast, picked up a paper or something, found a place to rent. And you know, it's funny when I think about that now. Parents feel these days that they have to be so involved. You know, we have to find out where the kids are going, help them move in. But we did all that on our own. It seemed like at age 18 you could do anything. And you felt old enough and wise enough to step out in that big, big world. But now I'm noticing a lot of... young people are still staying at home later. You know, I see 30-year-olds and they're still at home or still haven't taken that big step to go into the big wide world. Whereas I seem to know what I wanted to do at 17. When I left school and I got that work, I thought the first thing I have to do is go back to Holland to see my roots. And And so in one sugar season, I was able to save my money and go back to Holland and meet the family that basically we had left behind.
And this was age 18?
Yes.
18. We've just got a few minutes to go.
Is that 40 minutes already?
Yeah, we've hit 35 minutes.
All right.
So it was important to talk about how your life now, or your adult life, has been influenced by your upbringing. We've got a little bit of time to do that now. Okay. So did you want to talk about that?
Okay. All right. I think basically what I'd like to really say is that I'm very grateful that I'm living here in Australia and grateful to my parents for bringing us here. Getting a little emotional now. To never take a day for granted. And I wake up every morning and I'm blessed that I've got a home. I know it's so difficult for people to get homes now and to work and to find work, but it was so easy then when I left home to find work and establish myself. And very grateful to my parents for that nurturing, that upbringing that now we can share with. I've got two children, share with my children and grandchildren, I guess, for the future. I'm inspired by my parents that they took that step to come over here, and I think they've instilled in me that knowing that I can do whatever I want to do in life and it's up to me. And that's a philosophy that I've shared with a lot of students that I've taught through the years, that if they want something to happen in life, it's up to them. They've got to make it happen. And those possibilities are there. I like to do research. I like to learn from people. And I share with my children that you never stop learning. And as time goes on, you look back, and that's all part of the journey that you go on in life.
Cynthia, that's a lot of ground that we've covered from your parents and their journey and your life here and now the things that you've learned. So thank you so much for sharing all of that. And I realised that right at the very beginning we forgot to say your dad's name. What's your dad's name?
My father's name is Hank Hoogstraten. Yes, and he's been a wonderful inspiration in my life, as my mum as well, and very grateful for where I am in my life with how they've brought me up.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Okay, thanks, Helen.